Hello, and welcome to Living with Dying, the podcast where we try to break the taboos around death and dying and learn to talk about it. Thank you if you've been listening since the beginning, and if you have, you'll know we've covered so many aspects of death and dying, from what it's actually like to die, to how it feels to lose your nearest and dearest, the different ways grief can strike, the different ways we cope or don't with loss, how counselling can help, what part faith can play, how to help others going through grief, and how to pick up the pieces and rebuild a life after a big loss. Well, for today's podcast, I'm delighted to be joined by Sarah Parfitt, who's going to talk about the death of her father almost a year ago. And this is unusual today because we've come to do the recording in a church. First time I've done this for this podcast. And I'd like you to explain, Sarah, what's brought us here? Why are we in this Holy Trinity Church in Cookham?
Thank you. Thank you, Dilys. Yes, we're at Holy Trinity Church because this is a place I find great solace. I've been living in Cookham for the last 13 years and attending church services here, and my two sons are choristers and have been for the last 8 years. And it's a place of great reflection, and it's a place where I find moments of quiet to reflect on my father's death. And it's part of our community, and the church community has been very supportive towards me and my family.
And was your father a religious man?
My father used to go to church, but he was also a man of quiet faith as well. He sensed God on the farm and in the countryside. Yes, I would say my father was a Christian. He used to go to church, not all the time. He also found his faith when he was out on the farm, when he was with the animals, when he was with my brothers. You know, a sense of finding faith and spirituality in nature as well.
So faith is important to both of you. It runs in the family. But you find, you come here really to be close to him, do you?
Yeah, I come here several Sundays a month when my sons are singing, and I just like to sort of sit and be still and listen to the hymns. And I feel close to him here. I feel close to him here, but I also feel close to him when I'm out running, when I'm out close to nature, when I'm on the family farm, and when I listen to spiritual music. So all of those things, really.
So tell me more about him. What was he like as a person?
So my dad was the best. He was a farmer. He lived for his farm, his animals, his family, his friends, and he loved food as well. You know, he used to love a Sunday roast that my mum is a brilliant cook. Fortunately, she's still with us, and she loves cooking and baking. So weekends were a time of baking, Sunday roasts, scones and cream, always lots of lovely fresh vegetables from the garden, beef from the farm. And so he just loved that lifestyle. He also loved animals. He had a dog called Patsy, and he lived for his family, friends and animals, I think.
And are you happy to talk to me about how he died in the last few days?
Yeah, of course. So we lost Dad last March. It was March the 11th, and he'd not been very well for, over a year. He'd been going back into hospital. Nothing sort of particularly serious, but his heart was slowing down, and so we knew that we had limited time. And then it was on March the 2nd last year, I was giving a presentation in a local school with my son, who's 13, and I had a call to say he'd been rushed into hospital and he wasn't very well. And I had a funny sense in my stomach that this could be the last time. I don't know why, I just felt like it felt different from other times, from what my brother was saying and my mum was saying. And so I carried on, bizarrely, I carried on doing this assembly and decided I'd do that, and then I'd go down straight away and see him. I guess I hadn't quite registered what was happening. And then I drove down. He was at Swindon Hospital, at the Great Western Hospital. And I drove down. I listened to the radio and listened to music and just tried to prepare myself. And when I got there, he was quite distressed. he'd been taken to the hospital by ambulance, and his dog, Patsy, who I just mentioned, it's a collie dog, he absolutely loved Patsy, had jumped into the ambulance. I feel quite emotional speaking about it because he really wanted Patsy to go with him. Oh. And she couldn't go. So he went in the ambulance to hospital, and he was still calling out for the dog the whole way. And then when I got to the hospital, he was still calling out for his dog. So it was very distressing, you know, to see that.
Do you think he knew then that he was dying and wouldn't see the dog again?
Because at that point, it was impossible to find out because he was really unwell at that point. But I think there was a sense that he probably knew, yeah. And I guess it was also, the farm was his life. So my parents bought that farm in 1976. So I was about 8 at the time. And they renovated it and it was our home, our family home. And so I think it was partly the dog, but partly that sense of leaving his spiritual home, leaving the farm, leaving the animals, leaving my brothers and my mother. But anyway, that was, I arrived at the hospital, he's still calling out for his dog, and it was very distressing, and that went on for hours, and I sat there for hours just listening to him. And then my brothers also sort of popped in to see him and my mother, and then I hadn't come very prepared, and I went back home to get my stuff, sort of waiting. I was on tenterhooks, really, to see what happened, and then I came back the next day, and I spent the next 9 days in hospital with him. My mother also came with me, and it's just a very strange time. You can't quite prepare yourself for it, really. So you just feel a kaleidoscope of emotions because, you know, there was that sort of distressing side to my father when he was calling out for the dog and feeling very agitated, and then he was calm. And then we were told by the doctors that, you know, he was nearing the end of his life, as we suspected, and his heart was slowing down, so it was just a question of time. And nothing can prepare you for that. Nothing can prepare you for that, you know. You can't do anything about it. It's outside your control. You feel powerless. And I guess it was just a question then of just spending time with him, and I just remember thinking, I haven't got much time. I can't leave his side. I've got to stay here. And I kept asking my husband and my sons, do you mind if I stay? Do you mind if I stay? And they were just brilliant. They just said, you need to have this time. It was a very strange time because in some ways the day seemed very long because nothing was happening. But then I wanted to hold on to those moments. So it was a very bizarre time. And when my mother was with me and when I was on my own with my father, I just tried to talk to my dad because towards the end he was drifting in out of consciousness. And so I was just trying to tell him everything I always wanted to tell him, all those things that you wanted to say to someone. So I was telling him how much I loved him and talking about the fun times we'd had in the past. He used to love swimming and dancing and, as I said, meals, and just talking to him because I believed that he could hear what I was saying. And he couldn't talk because he wasn't well enough to talk, but his eyebrow went up every time I sort of asked a question. I said, can you hear me, Dad? And he couldn't move at that point, but he could see his eyebrow. So that was, I felt like I was having a connection with him. And although this sounds really bizarre, I was playing music and the music was a mixture of the Wurzels because he used to love that, being, you know, having lived on a farm all his life. Alad Jones, all his spiritual songs, and then ABBA. Because he used to love ABBA in the car. So I was playing like a part of a DJ in the hospital with Mum there as well, playing all this music. I know it sounds bizarre, but it was just a way of getting through that time. And also I thought if he could hear, he could enjoy that music in those last moments.
It's really hard for us, isn't it? Because I've been in the same situation as you. Being at a bedside for a week, watching somebody die, and we don't know how much they can take in. Mm-hmm. We want them to hear all those lovely things that you've just talked about, but we don't know. We feel a bit foolish, don't we, jabbering on?
Yes.
When we're not sure how much they can hear, how much they can understand. Yeah. But it sounds wonderful that you got that reaction from him, that eyebrow, because that presumably motivated you to carry on.
I couldn't have been anywhere else. I mean, practically, it was quite difficult being there for those 9 days, but actually, I just couldn't be anywhere else because my father's always been there for me, for the highs and the lows, and I just couldn't leave him. And my mother was there with me, and there were some humorous moments as well. It wasn't all doom and gloom because there was nowhere really to stay in the hospital, and there was a sort of like a couch, you know, and Mum and I spent the night doing tops and tails and sleeping next to my father because we didn't want to leave him. So I know it sounds kind of humorous almost to say that, but we just wanted to be there. And you have that sense you don't want to leave the bedside in case you miss something or you miss them and they slip away. And so that was another reason for staying in the room. I remember at times it was difficult because you wanted to kind of go out and get some fresh air from the hospital, but I didn't want to leave. But I did go out for one run just nearby around a park just to kind of have some time out. And then after those 9 days, it was on the last day, and I thought, because the doctors popped in, they were absolutely brilliant. I mean, that's one thing I would like to say, that one thing that helped me through that period, and I think my mum as well, is our faith, but also the hospital staff were amazing, and there was one palliative care nurse called Rita, and she popped in so many times, and you have got a sense of you've got hours or days or, you know, how long you've got, and she kept coming in and just sort of reassuring me. And also, there was a pastor at the hospital, and he came in and talked to me and did prayers with my father. And I think that would have been really important to my dad, so I hope he heard that. I believe he heard that. So on the last day when Dad passed away, it was probably about 10:30 at night, and my sons had some sports matches the next day, and we only have one car, so I had to get back to get the car to them in order to get them to their matches, and then I was going to come back and see Dad. And I actually sort of talked to my father and said, you know, Dad, I'm going to go away. I don't want to, but I'm going to go away tomorrow morning early. I'll just take the boys to their matches and I'll come straight back. And the nurse said, well, if you're going to do that, you need to lie down and have a sleep, because I found it very hard to sleep in the hospital. I don't know if you found that, but it's a hard place to sleep. And so I lay down next to my father, and she said, don't worry, I'll wake you up if anything happens. And about 40 minutes after that, my dad slipped away. And it was just, then you just feel a sense of emptiness, really. You don't quite know how to react because you've been expecting it, and yet it just hits you like a wave of emotion hits you. So then you go through all the, it was in the middle of the night, so you know, you go through the paperwork, and then they said you can stay the night here if you want to in the special room over there. And they'd put a special blanket over Dad, the hospital, you know, which was multicoloured, really nice rainbow-coloured blanket. And so I was given this blanket, and they also had, on that blanket, they had three hearts. And so they let me have one for myself and one for my mum and my brothers. So I've still got that heart at home. It's crocheted. And that felt nice to have that as something to take away that had been put on my dad, you know, during those last few days in the hospital. But I still have like images of my father after he passed away. It's quite hard to take in because he looked like a shadow of himself, not the dad I remember, you know. And so it is very tricky. And then the next morning I drove to the farm to speak to my mum and my brothers. And that was very strange, and just you just don't know quite how to react. But I think my faith kept me going in the sense that I felt like I'd been there for my father, and my brothers were absolutely brilliant. My mum was brilliant as well. You know, my brothers were very, very good and very practical at organising the next stages of it as well, you know, the funeral and all of those arrangements you have to do. I think I was probably too emotionally fragile to do that kind of thing. So, yeah.
I think you said a very significant thing there, which I haven't heard many people say, but I've said as well, which is you don't know how to be.
No.
You've not been in that situation before. You're at a loss. And when people say, how are you or how are you doing? I used to say, I don't know how I'm supposed to be.
Yes. Yes. And your emotions aren't linear either. So in one moment you can feel like the strongest person and yes, I'm so grateful that I had such an amazing amount of time. I'm so grateful for that and I am overall very grateful. But then something happens. There's a memory, a flashback. For example, I mentioned Dad's dog. I went back to the farm and Patsy was waiting outside the window for Dad. And when I did the door, she jumped on his bed because he was downstairs before he died. And that just made me so emotional. I couldn't stop crying. Or, for example, when I'm in this church where we're sitting now, I might hear one of Dad's favourite hymns. So he used to like All Things Bright and Beautiful because I think he linked it to the farm and nature and the joy of creation. And that will send me over the edge as well, make me feel very emotional. So it's just, you can't plan for it, can you?
No, things come up and surprise you all the
Yeah.
time, don't they? Particularly in the very early days, I think.
Yes.
And like you say, you can think you're being strong, and then suddenly you find you're collapsing like a little leaf or something very fragile.
Exactly. And I remember when I was at a church service, it's probably about 2 months after Dad died, and I was feeling fine when I came in. I was chatting to everyone, and I suddenly thought, Dad's gone. I'm not going to see him again. And it just really hit me in this church, and I started crying. I was really trying to sort of control my crying, and then my friend just put her hand on my shoulder, and yeah, it's just, it comes and goes.
How has your faith helped you?
Think my faith has helped me because I have a sense that my dad is with me spiritually, and also that we'll be reunited in death. So it's not the last, it's the last in this life. Hopefully, in the next life, we'll be reunited again. And that is a comfort to me. And that's why I suppose I find comfort in hymns, in spiritual songs. It's a reminder that we'll be reunited, but in a different way, not in this physical world. But also, I think there's a very supportive community in this church at Holy Trinity as well. People, we have services to remember those we've lost. And I guess, you know, when I'm out, as I mentioned, I like running and doing exercise. And when I'm in that kind of quiet, still space, I feel God's presence, but also I feel a sort of sense of connection with my father. I think even coming together for a service is helpful. People ask you how you are. As my father was getting progressively more ill, we say prayers in the church for those we've lost, or people's names are read out. So there's a sense that you're not on your own, you're not completely isolated. And I have to say that sadly, quite a few of my friends have lost loved ones recently. So it's a sense that we're kind of going through it together as well.
I did an interview with Rabbi Jonathan Romaine recently, who lost his son a year ago, and he said his faith wasn't any help to him at all because he didn't feel his son had gone on to a better life. He thought he'd had a very good life as it was. He didn't think he'd see him again. So he didn't find it any help. So it's very interesting to hear from your point of view the
Yeah.
opposite, really.
Yes, I think that's a very different scenario because I think losing a younger person is also very different. You know, I feel, although I miss my father, that he had 91 very full years. And I can imagine that if you're losing a younger person, it must be a lot more difficult to come to terms with because there's a sense they should have live longer, and there's so much more to live for. And so I think it's a very different experience or journey, isn't it? And everyone's experience of faith is also different.
And everyone's experience of grief is individual, as we're learning. Every time I talk to people, it's different. Can you give any tips or advice to people about how you would have liked to be supported or how you were supported, the kinds of things that friends did for you that was very therapeutic?
I was really, really blessed that I had a really good group of friends around me. So someone dropped off a meal, text to see how I was feeling when my dad was in hospital. I remember the night that he passed away, speaking to a couple of my really close friends and saying, you know, I think I haven't got much time left. And just they listened to me and they reflected on what I said. They didn't give me advice, they just listened to me. I think actually what you need is someone to listen to you. You don't really want someone to tell you what you should do or how you should feel at that very difficult moment, but you just want people to listen. And so that was really helpful. I've got friends in the church, so that was really good. Running friends, I love running, so I love going off for a run with a friend. I've got different running buddies, so I run along the Thames, and just talking things through is also very therapeutic. And actually, on the day after my father passed away, I remember going for a run, and it's just really helpful just to be physically doing something. It's almost like meditation to do that, and also to talk with a friend alongside that. So I think that's really helpful. And I think also through music, not just religious music, but you know, my kids are very involved with music, and I found that very cathartic, listening to singing and music, because it lifts your soul and lifts your spirits.
I know you've written a poem, or you wrote a poem. Would you like to read that to us?
Of course. So this poem comes with a story, and I wrote it the night before my dad's funeral. And as a family, we wanted to make the funeral very personal and very family orientated. So everyone contributed in different ways. So one of my brothers organized it. He was absolutely amazing. Another brother wrote something for my father. And I was going to read a poem or write a poem. And my son, my younger son, who's a chorister here, sang Abide With Me. And it was really emotional, and there wasn't a dry eye in the church. And my other son did a reading, and my nephew did a reading. So we tried to make it a personal, almost like a celebration of Dad's life. And so it was really wonderful, and it's a lovely memory for me. But I wrote this poem, and I only wrote it at midnight the night before because I thought I couldn't write a poem. And then the night before, I decided to write a poem. So I had chosen something from a book, and then I thought, no, I've only got one chance to write something about my father, and here it is. So I'll read it to you. Dad, I still remember the night you slipped away, weeping and wishing that you could always stay. I kissed your forehead and then whispered good night, tucked you in and held your hand so very tight. A thousand memories then flashed through my mind of a dad and granddad so patient and kind, of a man who loved and laughed his way through life, who lived for his family, friends, farm and wife. And on what seemed to be the bleakest of nights, with each breath you put up the greatest of fights, until your life then gradually ebbed away and you felt the Lord beckoning you home to stay. I still recall the morning after you left. I felt devoid of emotion and bereft. I doubted my shattered heart would ever heal. Tears cascaded down my cheeks, it felt surreal. Then I heard a voice of calm inside my head. It kept saying, I'm still with you. I'm not dead. I'll always be with you wherever you go. Whatever the season, sun, wind, rain, or snow. From dawn until dusk, I'll be by your side. And all those I cherish, I'll forever guide. A love like ours, transcends time and never dies. And we will meet again in God's heavenly skies.
Did you manage to read that out at the funeral?
I was struggling. I was struggling in the second bit. I could feel all the emotions, but I wanted to be brave. My father's always taught me to be brave, to be bold, to be resilient. My mother's also like that. My mum and dad are the most, well, my dad was the most amazing person. My mum is still so resilient, and I guess that's rubbed off on all of us. And I really wanted to just do that for my father, just read the poem out.
And I'd like to ask you another question, which I haven't asked anybody, any one of my interviewees yet, but it keeps occurring to me that I should ask. Do you feel you've had the opportunity to talk about your father enough since he died? And is this kind of thing helpful because you are given the opportunity to?
I find personally that it is helpful to talk about it, but there's a limit to how much you can talk about it because you don't want to sort of keep going on about it with friends or with family. And also you have to think about everyone else's emotions too. So for example, my mother is, you know, coming to terms with not having my father there. She's finding it very quiet and isolating. And she's trying to come to terms with her own grief. So I don't want to sort of bombard her with my thoughts about how I'm feeling. And also I have two teenage children, and they are, one of them's going through GCSEs, the other has got special needs, and I don't want to sort of keep talking about that because they have a life to live as well. They remember their Diddy, their grandfather, with great affection, but I don't want to keep talking about it because I feel Dad would want us to be very pragmatic. Being a farmer, he was very pragmatic. He'd want us to remember him and live our best lives. And also I find in the evenings he used to phone me and talk about nothing. You know, we would talk about nothing, not he would talk about nothing. So we would just talk, I don't know, just about random things, you know, what we'd had for dinner or just everyday things. And I think in his absence I've realised it's not those sort of wow moments, but it's the ordinary moments that you miss. You know, the extraordinary and the ordinary, if that makes sense. Having a cup of tea, having a chat on the phone. I think I miss that. I wanted to do something positive in my dad's memory, and I decided to dedicate my London Marathon run to him. I felt Dad's presence then, because as I said, when I'm running, I feel very close to him as well, because it gives me time to think. But I got to the end, but I don't know how, because for the last 6 miles, I had muscular spasms and it was just really quite painful because I probably hadn't done enough training for it, in all honesty, because of what had been going on in my personal life. But I really wanted to do that for Dad, and partly because it was cathartic, partly to feel close to him, and partly so that one of his legacies would be helping other people. I basically decided to donate some of the money for a bench in my dad's memory. And it was really nice to do that because I felt when I was in the hospital there was nowhere really to go out and sit and reflect. You know, I was in the room and I didn't want to go very far away. So I thought by having the bench, and they put it next to a lake or a stretch of water, that people could go and sit and reflect. And so Rita and another member of the team came back and showed us the bench and we sat on it. And we felt very close to Dad, and we thought Dad would really approve of it. So hopefully other families will have somewhere to go. I think nurses and doctors do such a wonderful job, and I know we say that, but actually when you're there and it's such a fragile moment in your life and they're so kind and so giving, I'll be forever grateful.
Sarah Parfitt, thank you so much for sharing your story with me.
Thank you very much.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.